I take this opportunity to declare the meeting open. We have three items on our agenda. The first item is the briefing by the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa, PRASA, and Railway Safety Regulator on their organization, which means what their mandate is and what program they implement and whether what they are implementing and their strategy is in line with the transformation objectives of the country in as far as transport is concerned, particularly passenger rail as well as railway safety. We are also expecting them to identify whether there are gaps that need any intervention from the side of Parliament as well as the side of government, because it is this portfolio committee that would then influence a different way of doing things from government side as well as facilitate a legislation if there is a need for a legislative intervention. At this moment, we are not going to be focusing on the annual report and the financial report of the two entities. We are looking at the mandate of the entity, the strategy of the entity, which talks to the mandate, the program of the entities that are beginning to unpack and implement the strategy. When we look at that, we are then looking at the progress that has been made during the implementation process, the impact that has been made during the implementation process. And then we are saying, if we were to start the process all over again, would we do it in the same way up to the T, or we would do it differently? And what would influence us to continue in the same manner that we have done, that which will tell us that both the strategy and the program are effective and efficient in terms of progress and impact? And if we reflect and identify that we would not do it in the same way, there are things that we would continue to do and there are things that we would change and do differently, what influences us to arrive at that decision? That is, there are things that we would do in a different manner. Because when we start the cycle, we plan, we implement, and we evaluate. The evaluation that we do focuses on the progress that we are making and the impact that we are making, which will then influence our next cycle of planning. So that is what we are here for today. Nothing else, nothing more. Just that. If you have identified the gaps and you want to change the way of doing things, talk to us about the turnaround strategy. I think I have made myself very clear to both the teams that are going to be presenting as well as the members of the portfolio committee, because I would want members to ask questions that relate to what I've just explained. I will now take this opportunity to give it to Then the last item, the second item on the agenda is the briefing by the Department of Transport on tax recapitalization and the update on the bus rapid transit system. That will take place in the afternoon. That item of the agenda will take place in the afternoon. So we are going to have a meeting that is going to break and allow us to go to lunch and to the house. And then in the afternoon, we will continue with our meeting. Then the last item on the agenda would be the consideration and adoption of minutes of previous meetings. And I hope that by that time, the meeting will correct. We will have 8 members of the portfolio committee, and we will be in a position of adopting minutes and taking resolution. At this moment, we don't correct. May I now ask the director for rail operations from the Department of Transport, Mr. Godfrey Maluleke, to introduce the team that is going to be presenting to us. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members, and the delegation. I will start by Chairperson indicating that today's delegation was supposed to be led by our acting Director General, Mr. Mahlalela George. He could not be with us due to a number of things that are happening, so I was asked to lead the delegation. From the DOT, I've got Lebogang Ntwape, he's also a director in the regulation component of the department. I also have Ms. Thulile Tswalo and Mr. Jacob Mekwe. They are in the branch entity oversight. From PRASA, we have the chairperson of the board, Mr. Sfiso Buthelezi. We've got the group CEO, Mr. Tshepo Lucky Montana. Oh, okay. Mr. Tshepo Lucky Montana is the group CEO. We've got Ms. Cindy Mabaso of Guyana, CFO. We've got Mr. Steven Ngoveni, the regional manager of the Metro Rail Operations in Cape Town. Mr. Diro Holele is the general manager of corporate affairs in Prasa. We've got also 2 ladies who are heading the parliamentary office for Prasa. It's Ms. Portia Solekise and Sibul Jola. From RSR, we've got the CEO, Mr. Musingwa Mofi, Mr. Lawrence Bekile, Mr. Carvel Webb, and Ms. Tina Chagula. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We will now move on to item number 1, the briefing by the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, good morning. Indeed, we would like to thank the opportunity to share with you what we do at PRASA, what we call our achievements, and of course, the challenges that we are having. Well, the team of PRASA has been introduced. They will be taking us through the presentation. I won't reintroduce them. I would ask them to again reintroduce themselves when they start talking. Madam Chair, I would like to state up front the commitment of the Passenger Rail Agents of South Africa to effective communication with the committee and with Parliament, sharing information with you. We do recognize that information is power. We do also recognize that it's only when you have got complete information that you'll be able to perform your duties, that you'll be able to help us, to guide us, as we provide what we call a very essential service to the people of South Africa. We do want to commit to sharing with you both good news and the difficult one, sharing with you the bad news. We think it's very important to get the complete picture. We wouldn't come here and just tell you the good news. We do have serious challenges in many areas, and we would like the honorable members to be briefed on those things, because only then that you would be able to really effectively, critically appraise what we are doing. Madam Chairperson, ours is a less glamorous business, but would like to contend here that a very critical one in the whole public transport network. We have seen that a lot of people would like to deal with passenger rail, public transport, as a peripheral issue, but we hope to convince you today that what you are doing is at the center, is the nerve center of transport. And we'll also be going further and say to you, it's not just the nerve center, it is also the spine of the economy of South Africa. I'm sure you'll remember a few years ago when there was a strike at Metro Rail. Those days, the phones that were ringing were coming from people that we never thought would phone us. All of a sudden, they were concerned about the unavailability of trains. And to us, it did say, well, we had always known that we do provide a very important, non-glamorous service to the people of South Africa. So we think we're at the spine of the economy of South Africa. We do more than 2.3 million passenger trips per day, people that we take to and from work. Imagine what happens when the service is not operating. It becomes definitely red light. There is no doubt that you are a mass mover. We don't have an equal, whether it's buses, sorry to say, whether it's BRT, taxis, we remain the mass movers. We're going to share with you the process, which has been a very painful process, of the consolidation which has been taking place at BRASA. Honourable members, you know by now that BRASA, we operate four businesses. It's Metro Rail, it's Autopax, which is our bus service, city-to-city Translux, Intersite, which is our property portfolio, and long-distance passenger rail, Shosholoza Mail. It has been a very long and arduous process, and sometimes a very painful process, to try and get all those organizations under one roof, trying to bring different cultures, different financial systems, different IT systems under one roof. I'm happy to report, and that's what we'll be sharing with the honorable members, that a lot of progress has been done. I think one can say without any fear of contradiction that that is a process that we think that we have done very efficiently, but obviously it's been an overstatement to say we have finished the process. There are still things that we are busy with. Some of them came out during the strike that we had towards the end of last month. We'll share with you that there are issues which we think are issues of consolidation. some of the things that we have inherited, some of the things that we think that we can't continue with because they are inefficient. They render the whole system inefficient. I will be able to share that with you. Madam Chairperson, would like to share with you our role, the role that we are expected to play in the FIFA World Cup, the preparations that we have gone through. Obviously, we have gone just through the Confederations Cup. The experiences were very critical in mass moving of people during that time. But again, it's very valuable experience for us, which we think that we'll share with you today. And again, we think that it will help us as we prepare for the 2010 World Cup. Again, as far as that is concerned, we'll be requesting the honorable members to also help us to try and sharpen ourselves so that we are better placed to meet the challenges come 2010 World Cup. We'll share with you our investment program. We'll share with you what we are doing to try and protect jobs, which is very important to us. Not just protecting jobs, but creating new jobs as we get through with our new investment program. I think that's very, very important to us. With all the challenges that we have had with the global economic crisis, I think the board of PRASA and management and the executive management of PRASA has been very resolute in saying, let's try everything we can to try and protect the jobs. And I'm happy to say that until now, we have resisted the temptation of shedding jobs. We do all this, perhaps putting my head as the chairperson of the board, that what is at the center of all this is good corporate governance. Our board is very much committed to that, that as we do all those things, we don't do them at the expense of good corporate governance. And we would like to assure you that as we march and move forward, that is going to be the center of our doing business. Nolosi, allow me to call the Group CEO of PRASA, Mr. Lucky Montana, to take us through the presentation. We hope the presentation that we are going to give you is a presentation which is going to give you a helicopter view of what we do, the men and women who wake up every day and work at PRASA, to ensure that the multitudes of our people get to work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for such a wonderful overview and also a demonstration that this entity has got a chairperson and a board that is actually commanding the staff that operates here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, colleagues from the Department of Transport. As said, my name is Lucky Montana. Chairperson, I'm going to try to move with lightning speed in the interest of time without leaving any of the most important issues that are there.
Which train are you taking
us on? It's the Tshwane Business Express, one of our most successful trains we've introduced. Chairperson, I moved to sit this side because I think we circulated on Thursday presentation. There were some minor changes we've made that are not material. I'll indicate in the process. Thank you, Chairperson. It was of course quite detailed, and I hope it has given members the opportunity to reflect and analyze and to be able to raise the issues and the questions that are there. I'll start, Chairperson, with the Chairperson left and spoke about the PRASA. I think that it has become so much common today that people talk and use Metro Rail, PRASA interchangeably as if it's one company. PRASA was launched, of course, in March this year after a long process with the amendment to the legislation. action that's done, led by the department, by the Portfolio Committee on Transport, and that legislation was signed into law by the President of the Republic in December 2008. So it's a new baby, and it brings together, of course, the number of entities, Metro Rail itself, which is the largest of our own operation, the Shosholoza Mail, which is the intercity long distance, the property portfolio, which is Intersite, and of course Autopex, which is the buses, both city to city as well as Translux. We are of course chairperson in the course of discussions about the possible transfer of the Blue Train from Transnet into Brasa as part of that family, and I think that they will report in due course about progress in that respect. I just want to say, Chairperson, that the establishment of PRASA is not just one, the establishment of yet another entity. I think that it brings certain strategic advantages. It's a key leverage for government's efforts in transforming public transport. It's going to be very vital in socio-economic transformation. And I think especially when we talk about frequent public transport as well as access for both the rural and the urban poor. I think, Chairperson, many of us are aware that people in the rural areas use buggies to travel. For the first time, we've got an entity which is owned by the state, which brings buses, both the road-based as well as the rail modes together. And I think that it is providing us with some good possibilities to change in the lives of people. We have many people, millions of people, over 3 million people travel as migrant workers between the major centers of our country and the rural areas. They use mainly Shosholoza Mail, and you can see during the peak periods in the Easter weekend as well as in December, these people are able to go home using Shosholoza Mail to reach the rural areas of the country. Now, for the first time, we won't be taking someone from Johannesburg to Queenstown. We'll also be able to put a bus that takes that person from Queenstown and distribute them into the rural areas. And I think that is the kind of advantage that PRASA is bringing into the process. It doesn't run, of course, day-to-day operations. Those are run by Metro Rail, Shosholoza, Intersite, as well as Shosholoza Mail. But PRASA's primary role, of course, is to own, to manage, to develop, operate, and maintain the assets that are under its control and drive that. The key mandate of PRASA, in terms of the legislation, I think previously in the Legal Succession Act, provided that SRCC, the former SRCC, delivers rail commuter services in the public interest. That has since changed. We are now allowed to provide long-haul passenger rail services and as well as provide long-haul bus services. The secondary object is that we are required to generate income from the exploitation of assets acquired by PRASA, and I think this relates to stations, this relates to the railway network. And in addition, of course, the legislation requires us to implement all of those things, taking into account government, social, economic, as well as transport objectives. The operating structure, as you said, we are a group, and then, of course, we've got all those businesses that are there. And let me go back, Chairperson, to indicate that initially, government had taken a decision to consolidate only passenger rail entities in 2004. That was in December 2004. That process emanated from even much earlier than that. In 2001, 2002, there was a discussion about the restructuring of Transnet. One of the decisions was that all passenger entities must be taken out of Transnet so that Transnet can focus on its primary mandate, which is the freight transport, the freight logistics, and that we needed to create a new entity, a passenger entity that will report to the Minister of Transport. And initially, Autopex, which was a division of Transnet, was not part of the entities that were meant to be transferred. But with the preparations for the World Cup and everything, at the time that Transnet wanted to dispose of Autopex, government took another decision that Autopex, instead of being disposed, it needs to come in into the new entity that is being created, so that we can only add another advantage, that is ensuring that we have buses that will also serve as feed and distribution services that are there. We've created a roadmap for PRASA since its launch. I won't go much into those details, to position it, to make sure that we consolidate its functions and so that it can meet all its mandates. The primary challenge in the commuter rail, and I think, let me emphasize, Chairperson, that we use, when we talk about commuter rail, we talk today in terms of metro rail, because that is the bulk of our own activity, and that is what impacts on the economies of the cities and the economy of the country as a whole. And the major backlog is the major challenge that we face is the history of underinvestment that is underpinned the environment that we have. And we see it in every area of our activity. We see it in the aging infrastructure. We see it in coaches on trains that are over almost 40 years old, trains that are failing on a day-to-day basis. We see it in the loss of skills, engineers who are not having any work to do and having to leave the kind of environment that we have. So underinvestment has been the major issue. And I think the graph before us, it clearly shows the gap between what are the required investments that we require in rail and what are the actual investment. And if you go back 4 years ago, the investment levels, particularly on the capital side, only amounted to about 800 million rand. So that was not enough to maintain as well as to develop the kind of massive infrastructure that you have in that we have in place. So it shows between what we are spending on the green line and the red line, that gap explains the kind of problems that we face today. But if you look at that, the capital investment has been on the increase. Let me go back. As you can see there, the investment in rail infrastructure, both on rolling stock as well as in the infrastructure, has been very, very slow. I think that if you look in many countries, you compare at the kind of investment that is required, it explains why we've always had the 20 billion rand backlog. The last coach that was bought, the new coach that was bought in the 80s, which means over 20 years ago. The last key railway network or extension that was done was the Mabopane line in the 1980s again. The only railway extension that we've done recently is only a 4.5-kilometer extension in Khayelitsha, and that was at the cost of about 300 million rands. That, again, is not significant. It was an extension of an existing line. But if you look at the coverage of the entire network, we have a problem where the railway network goes to the east and all land use and other developments go to the west or to the north. I think that the typical example is in the Port Elizabeth area. You could see that our railway network is far from everything, and that is why the usage of that railway system is very, very low. I mean, about 5,000 people a day utilizes that network. Now, it's not efficient for in railways to carry 5,000 people in a day, because, as the chairman said, a railway is a mass move of people. If you want to use it, at least in a peak, you need to carry about 7,500. You are using that asset more effectively. But if you carry 5,000 people in a day, there's clearly no case for you to maintain that kind of service. It means we are using a mode that is not appropriate to the volumes or to the demand that is that you require there. The other challenge is in the housing area. Many years, because people used to work in the East Rand, the industries were located there. Our railway system is still designed to go in there. And development has taken place in the north. So there's a huge gap. So the coverage of the existing commuter rail system has been quite limited in a big way. So it shows the gap between land use as well as transport planning and I think Chairperson, you spoke about how can we do things differently. And I think that one of the things that we should be raising when we talk about doing things differently is how we are going to get land use planning as well as transport infrastructure to go hand in hand. And I think that the many poor communities are showing us, when we look at informal settlements, people are settling closer to roads because they want to be closer to infrastructure. They want access. Whereas our land use planning process is not in line with that. In fact, in most instances, it's been killing our railway system, and I think that this is something that we we need to look at very carefully. The now, Chairperson, I've got it before us another graph here. I've always, in all my presentations, I've always presented this graph, and I think that many members of this committee are familiar with it. And this graph, it tells the most basic story about the effect of that underinvestment, the situation that we have. As you can see, that the bulk of our current fleet on rolling stock is between in those two bars there, 28, 36 years, 37 to 45 years. That's the problem that we have. You can see that between zero as well as 18 years, we don't have much of the fleet. And you can see that most of the current fleet is approaching, in terms of its age profile, it's approaching the time of its retirement between 45 years and 50 years. Now, when you talk about reliability, I know that South Africans say we want better services from Metro Rail, we want reliable services, but this graph tells you that every train that moves out of a station, its probability of failure is very high, that it's likely to fail in the system, and therefore I think that has been at the heart of the problem that we have. So this is what essentially when we talk about underinvestment, when you look at it from the rolling stock side, it tells you the kind of problem, it summarizes for us the kind of problem that we face. We can take it to the signaling system, which I think that if you look at the signaling cabins, out of over 1,000, only about 26 remains, but most of those are no longer, I think that they've become so obsolete, which means when you want to talk about safe and reliable services, if you want to move trains faster in a safer way, the signaling system plays quite a major role, and we do not have the kind of environment that we have. So, Chairperson, we don't want to deal with the problem. So just highlighting that the major challenge facing us is one of reversing the history of underinvestment in this rail industry. We however, put a strategy in place, working with the Department of Transport. A number of interventions were developed. The department started with the National Rail Plan, which was approved by Cabinet in 2006. And the then SRCC, before PRASA was formed, was then instructed to put in place a turnaround strategy. And the main emphasis of that turnaround strategy was that we needed to implement between 2007 and March 2010 a strategy for stabilizing commuter rates, which means arresting the decline, making sure that we bring in safety and security in that environment, increase the availability of rolling stock, make sure that we arrest the decline in passenger numbers, make sure that we retain the patronage levels. I think all of those interventions were addressed. So we put in place a strategy that says the first 3 years we are going to stabilize the system. And I think that if you look at all our activities for the past 3 years, until March next year, they'll be focused on arresting the decline in commuter railways. Beyond that, we'll be looking at recovery and growth phase, but I think that I'll touch on that when we come. But we are in the second phase, and I want to say that with all we have done and with the kind of support and funding that we've received from government, I want to state very confidently that we have, even before March 2010, that today Metro Rail is a more stable business than it was about 3-4 years ago. It's able to meet its obligations. There was a time, Chairperson, when you go to a railway station, you get the timetable. But the train that is on the timetable, Metro Rail, is not able to run. That's what we used to have. Today we are able to meet all of those obligations that we have. That shows you that we have sufficiently stabilized the business even before the end of the timeline or deadlines that the department has set for ourselves. What are the key elements of the turnaround that we implemented? The main one was that people were complaining that there are not enough trains. Over a third of the rolling stock was out of stock. Out of the 4,600 coaches, over 1,700 of those were not working. They were parked outside. They couldn't work. They were not safe to be used. So we implemented a program called the Accelerated Rolling Stock Program, where we agreed that we'll take about 2,000 coaches to be refurbished and upgraded so that they can be put back into service. Today, Chairperson, we are proud to say that Over 1,500 of those coaches have been completed, upgraded, and put back into service. And we think that we've committed another 700 coaches to be done this year, which means by March next year, would have refurbished 2,200 coaches, 200 more than the number that we've that has been put as a target for ourselves. So that accelerated rolling stock program continues. I want to emphasize, though, Chairperson, that if you look at the graph that I showed earlier on, that it is only buying us time. It is not the future, and I'll come to what that future is for us. Secondly, we'll be focusing our energies as management, as companies, on improving on reliability. That is, trains on time, and ensuring that we increase on predictability. Because when people go to the station, when they get the train, they want to make sure that that train is on time. It has been a major problem. People have been getting late at work, and I think that has been a major complaint facing a lot of people. While people also, when they have a train at 7 a.m., at 7 or 8 or whatever time, when they get there, they found that because of the old rolling stock, that train has been cancelled. So we've been trying to reduce that, and I think that will show the numbers. I think that we are quite, all indicators are that the recovery, I think that we are well on course in achieving that. Safety and security was a major issue. It started during even the pre-1994 period with political violence and crime, and the then decision to withdraw the railway police. Today we are proud to say that over 3,000 of the railway police have been trained and returned into service, and we've seen crime going down by over 40% within a very short space of time. And we think that is an important achievement. The target is to have by 2010 4,600 of these railway police being deployed in our stations as well as on trains to ensure that we have a zero tolerance towards. The quality management system, particularly the ISO 9001, was an important issue to make sure that all our systems, procedures, they pass the standards, all our regions of Metro Railway required to be subjected to an independent assessment by the South African Bureau of Standards, and I think that all of them had passed and they got they were certified. It has been a detailed process because when you talk about raising the level of your service, when you want it to be more sustainable, what is important is your quality management system being put in place. In terms of the rail safety regulator, I won't go much into that, but we are required to implement what we call a safety management system, SMS, as well as a safety plan, so that there's safety in our operations. And I must say, Madam Chair, that the first 2 years we did well, but we found that in the last financial year, our railway safety, we had a couple of incidents, and I think that in all those incidents, when we analyze them, the human factor was one of the major issues. And I think that is a challenge that we need to work on, and I think that the rail safety regulator will deal with some of the stats that goes with it. So it is a weakness. We've realized that some of the accidents, like when a train hits another train, the main issue has been the human factor, human error. Even though we may have an old system, however, we can't blame an old system. We've seen, for example, that the accident in Springs was it because of a driver driving faster because we've got speed restrictions. Like on the roadside, we've got certain sections of the network where you have to drive at certain kilometers, where there are certain procedures, and a driver will not follow that. Or a driver is required to drive with glasses, has left their glasses at home, or they didn't put them on, and we have an accident there. But we know that other accidents are not linked to that. For example, when you look at the Soweto accident, it was because of heavy rains, which affected the entire system, and I think that we had an accident. So there are issues that we've got control over, there are issues that we don't have control over. And one of the decisions that we need to implement in line with the advice from the rail safety regulator, a human factor management program to make sure that we deal with that. We've also applied the program, I think, in the 1980s as well as the early 1990s. Because of underinvestment, we lost a lot of skills, particularly engineers, technicians, most of them going to the UK, to Australia, and I think that we still see adverts even to this very day in the newspapers from those countries trying to take people from our country. And of course, I think that with the introduction of the HAL train, we've seen a lot of some of the technical people moving in there. So the retention of skills has been a major issue because without the critical technical skills, your ability to run a railway system is completely will not work. Customer satisfaction, We know about the burning of trains and stations. We brought that we've almost eliminated that kind of a problem in some instances with the help of the police, but also in terms of raising awareness. But I think that we've been able to raise the customer satisfaction to new heights. Let me indicate that those initiatives were supported by an allocation that was unprecedented in the history of over the past 10 years. I spoke about when I was an official at the Department of Transport four or five years ago, we used to spend about 2.7 billion rands on railway. 1.9 used to go to operations, and about 700-800 million rands used to go to for CAPEX. But if you look at this at the increased funding today, in the current MTF rather, government has committed over 25 billion rands in making sure that we upgrade the system. And you can see that the CAPEX part of it is about 14 billion rands. And if you look, for example, in the next 3 years, we've got 3.8 billion just on CAPEX alone. It's going to 4.8. It's increasing to over 5 billion rands. And I think that's good news in making sure that we upgrade the system and get it to the right level. So on the operational side, I think that the chairperson, you can see that we have been allocated more resources. Metro Rail alone, we spend about 2.7 to 3 billion rands on its operations as a subsidy. In every rand that that is being spent on rail, in every rand, one rand that is spent there, 33% is paid by the passenger. 67 cents is paid by government as a subsidy. So that is very important. So it's a highly subsidized system. I think that what we need to do, of course, as PRASA, which is a major challenge, is to make sure that not because people pay 33 cents, we then say they must get cheap services. I think that has been a major challenge. Many of our own employees do not believe in quality and customer service. They just say it's cheap, therefore it must be bad. And I think that is something that we've driven a concerted campaign to educate our own employees that the customer is king, the customer comes first. That is very important that we address the kind of issues that are there. Now, with the kind of allocations that we've got, one of the key achievements, one of the achievements that we found is that particularly for the last financial year, we've seen some very interesting targets. I want to highlight some of those. Other than the fact that we've successfully concluded the consolidation process as directed by Cabinet in 2004, we have seen an increase in passenger trips by 9.2%. And we think, Chairperson, that is very important. It means today that Metro Rail is able to schedule more trains than it has been able to do over the past few years. And that is an indicator. Today we have got people who go to the station, and their chances of getting a train within a 15 minutes in the peak is great. In a region like the Western Cape, you get a train within 5 minutes. In some parts of Gauteng, particularly on the Soweto line, you do get a train within 4 to 5 minutes as well. Well, I marveled. I visited Switzerland last year, and they were moving Jefferson from 3 minutes, and they wanted to do a 2 minute headway. So we are still talking about 5 minutes. They're talking about two minutes headway, which means in the peak, they'll have a train every 2 minutes. And we know that in some parts of Europe, with the upgrading of the signaling system, they've been trying to move trains at 1 minute 50 seconds so that they can have a train. So it means, therefore, that we're still far. And when you look at on-time performance, when we were in Germany, the operator there released a report and said that their performance is 97%. And the German public was up in arms and said 97% is not good enough. We are still talking about trying to meet the target of 90%. So we could see that the gaps that are there, and for us to move into an environment which is world-class. But we've had our own achievements, Chairperson. I think that with the decline in Metro Rail, passenger train trips have decreased to below 500 million passenger trips. Today, we brought it back to over 646 million passenger trips. I think that is a major recovery. It means, therefore, that we're scheduling more trains within Metro Rail. More people are traveling, and it's thanks to the kind of investment and interventions that we've received from government. We've also seen that a lot of people, particularly with the economic difficulties, had moved to railways, and we've seen that overall we've had about a 7% increase in fare revenue, and I think that that has been very good for us. In terms of the coaches that have been brought back, we've had a target of 709 coaches were refurbished, and they've been brought into service as part of that process. We've seen also during the financial year we launched new projects, particularly station improvement projects and everything, and we'll come up with that. We are also happy that the Khayelitsha rail extension was ultimately completed, and we've seen that we've started to run a minimum service to test the system. We've been working with the City of Cape Town on that particular project, and we think that for many people who had to use a taxi to get to the station, they're now able to get access to we built two new stations there. They're able to get access to stations much quicker than it was. We've also, in the last financial year, got a government guarantee to buy 570 new buses for Autopex, which would be initially be used for 2010, and then afterwards they'll be absorbed within Autopex, both for city to city as well as 110 for city to city and 410 for Translux buses. That will be used beyond the soccer spectacular that is there. We've also introduced Honorable Faro a new service between King Williamstown and East London. I think that we've upgraded the station there. It's been one of the major issues people have been complaining about. You drive on the right on the roads in the Eastern Cape, you find people carrying posters or rather card boxes asking for a lift. And it has proven to be a very dangerous practice. We've extended that service. We think that within a reasonable period, we'll be able to extend it to Alice. And we see that there's also a lot of people who work in Bisho who live in East London, and they'll be able to use that kind of service. So I think that I think for us that is very important. We've also launched the second business express between Johannesburg and Pretoria, and I think that both trains have been oversubscribed. They've been full. I think that we've had a very good response there, and I think that it tells us that South Africans indeed are asking for better transport services, and we need to respond to the challenge. We played a major role, of course, in the 2010 World Cup. We built stations. Doornfontein Station was one of those. We've upgraded some of the key stations that were there. We've played a major role. We said, the Deputy Minister of Transport mentioned in his budget debate that almost 40,000 people travel on our railway system. And people travel on our... I think I'm proud to say that during the Confed Cup, we've never had any cancellation of those scheduled services during that time. We've never had any crime reported during that time. We've never had any injuries. And none of the trains that were going to the Confed Cup that were scheduled ever arrived late at the station. And I think that this is a lesson that you draw from both Japan and Korea in 2002, as well as in Germany, that if you want to move 40,000 people at a time, or 50,000 people, railway is going to be very important. And I'm happy to say, Chairperson, to report that all the stations that we're building closer to the railway, to the key stadia for 2010, we have made major progress. Doornfontein, of course, is completed. Nazareth is being completed. I think that as part of the transport month, it will be launched by the Department of Transport. We are in construction, and I think that is a picture of the Nazareth station next to Soccer City. It's 99% complete, and I think that it will be available for use. And I think that that station is not only going to serve Soccer City, but beyond the soccer spectacle, I think that we are going to have it extending the line so that we can connect more with Soweto, giving more of the communities on the west side of Soweto greater access and into those services. That is very important for us. There are some goodies in terms of the pictures that were there. I think that they give a sense of some of the work that we're implementing. I think that it's not only about rolling stock and signaling. You can see on some of the bridges that we have, I think that we've been building those so that people do not cross some of those things. The rail safety regulator will also report probably on some of the problems when you talk about old infrastructure. You can see the structure of that platform has changed altogether. And we had to implement on what we call a platform height or platform correction project. And I think that you'll see some of the projects, some of the platforms that we've changed. We have implemented, of course, during the past 18 to 24 months, a very aggressive capital program. It was driven by a number of things. One, it was driven by the need to stabilize the business. We're not investing for long term. And I want to emphasize that. The 25 billion rands that has been given to us was aimed at more of the stabilization of the system rather than providing new additional capacity for the future. So that was the main driver. And 80% of the resources that we've allocated were going on rolling stock primarily. Because that was the area of need at that time. So we didn't focus on a different area when the demand was to make sure that there's more trains available on our system. We of course had to implement the rail plan corridor interventions, particularly what we call safety critical interventions, and not investments. Safety critical interventions, particularly where it affected the platforms, the safety of passengers. I think that the rail safety regulator has been very strong around some of those issues to make sure that we implement that. And of course, 2010, as I've reported, was a major factor. That impacted on the kind of investment. If you look at the amount we spent, not only on upgrading stations, because out of the 2,000 coaches that we have, 65 train sets, which amount to about 700 coaches, are actually being prepared for 2010. So out of the 2,000, about 700 of those are going to be used and dedicated to 2010 to make sure that we are able to move people more effectively during the time. So for the past 3 years, it has driven our program quite aggressively, and you can see that we can move on that. And you can see when you analyze the capital program that has been given to us over the years, you can see that the bulk of the resources were going on rolling stock, and I think it's a deliberate choice that we've made until we've stabilized that. But as we move forward, you could see that the rolling stock is decreasing, so that we can also be able to improve on signaling, on telecoms, and other operating infrastructure that is required. As we move forward, Chairperson, I think that one of the major things that we have to take into account is that yes, we have stabilized, but we are not out of trouble as yet. I think that the issue about rolling stock reliability and availability remains a major challenge for us. I think that after March next year, we'll be able to talk a different language. And I think that there's also demand for additional services that we require. And the challenges remain for us. And I think there's no doubt that we need to do a number of things. The main challenge, and I think Chairperson relates to the point that the Honorable Chairperson raised, that what are the things that we'll do differently? There is a danger that we may overcapitalize on the existing system. And that is a real danger. Spend a lot of money on a system that we know that has now become so obsolete, that this system that we are running today is no longer the future of railways. Yes, we've got a beautiful train in the premier class, and I know that the honorable members, some of them travel on that train. They don't only put their cars, but they also get on board and enjoy that beautiful train. But the future of long-distance intercity travel is no longer a train that can move at 100 kilometers per hour. The future of long distances lies in high-speed trains. Between Johannesburg and Durban, we are currently considering a train that will be able to move at about 370 kilometers per hour. It means you should be able to travel between Johannesburg and Durban within 3.5 hours. That's the future of long distance travel. And the European systems that are successful in terms of intercity, people travel within Europe on board a train, precisely because it's competitive, not only in terms of price, but in terms of the travel times that are there. And I think that is an intervention that we require. It may take long, but South Africa in 10, 15 years time, if we plan forward, would require that kind of a system. And it's part of our corporate plan that we've tabled with the Department of Transport and has been tabled with Parliament, that we embark on such a project so that we make it a reality. And I think that some work is continuing with the Department of Transport, and I think in due course the Department of Transport will make announcements in that respect. So we cannot invest so much money on a system that is obsolete. We have to get it going for some years, whilst at the same time planning for the future. We need to say what kind of trains will we be having in the next 30 to 40 years. And the good thing about investment in railways, Honorable Chairperson, is that you get value for money. When you buy a car, you're going to use it for 5 years. When you buy a coach, it's likely to remain there for the next 45 years if it is maintained properly. So there's a good return. And that coach carries about 180 people at the most minimum. It means there's a good return over a period of time in investing in rail infrastructure and the kind of technologies that are there. This is part of the problems about the infrastructure that has been decaying, aging so fast. I won't go much into that. They are there in the system of this. I think that when you talk about the investments that we have, I've talked so much about rolling stock. One of the areas that we've been looking at has been the nature of the stations that we have. If you go to Hong Kong, the bulk of their funding for railways is generated from their property portfolio. They build those stations as transport and economic hubs. People go to the station as a destination in its own right. They go there shopping or to watch a movie and then get onto a train. But not everyone gets into a train. But they're able to generate the much-needed resources to invest in the railway system, to upgrade the infrastructure. We don't have those kind of stations. They've been built as Pumangena type of stations. You go in there, you come out, there's not any economic activity. We've identified 18 stations in the country that needs to be transformed as quickly as possible to become transport and economic hubs. A station such as Park Station is a major asset for our company. As it stands today, it's valued at over 300 million rand. A further investment so that it becomes the key transport hubs in the renewal of Johannesburg is vital. It's the second largest station in the African continent after Cairo, and it's a station that doesn't only service South Africa, but it services the entire SADC region. People travel whether by train or by bus from Johannesburg to Malawi, Blantyre, or from Johannesburg to Lesotho, Botswana. They move from Park Station. Yet if you look at the facility, it doesn't meet the kind of standards that are there. It doesn't even have transit accommodation for people who sleep over. People still sit in benches, when you can actually provide much cheaper accommodation in the old Park Station so that people can stay over there overnight and we generate the kind of resources that we require. Mabobani Station, over 40,000 people travel through that station in a day. Yet the facilities in that station are just not right. And I don't want to talk about facilities that are there. That's the design of the station. Everything that had to do with that station was done from a security point of view. A lot of concrete is not even attractive. The former Minister of Transport, he passed one of the stations and he called us and said, even if I were to get stuck, I will not get into this station because it looked like a dungeon. And I think that this is the kind of transformation that we have. So 18 stations have been identified, and we are looking at ways of financing those so that we're able to meet, they can meet the challenges over time. But in the short term, we've also put a program that we call Station Improvement Program. That program, we've put in 350 million rands into that program, and we've asked Interside, go and just bring about improvements, visible short-term improvements. And by that we mean fixing the toilets, the fencing, the lighting, and all of the smaller things that are there, the painting. And I think that the number of stations you've seen, like Charlotte's Bay in KZN, Newlands here, a number of stations have gone through that kind of a program. And I think that is one of the major areas that we want to put forward. I won't go much. I think Chairperson already spoke about the board of control that we have. The chairman is here. The board, the government and the board signs what we call a shareholder agreement. compact, where clear objectives are set by the government on what needs to be delivered, and I think that those objectives are captured there. I won't go much into those. Chairperson, I spoke about the platform correction project. You can see the gap. A lot of people, old people in particular, or during overcrowding, a lot of people fall in between those that gap that you see between the platform and the train. So the platform correction project is aimed at doing that. You can also see the gap as well. It's a major problem. And when you talk about people with disabilities, it's a major challenge to access the system in the same. Now, there's a platform that you see. Crown Station in Johannesburg, we've implemented that to level the train and the thing. So this is one of the major things. We've also implemented in other stations, a station like Denneboom. We've also raised the platform heights, implemented new technologies, and I think that it's not only for a beautiful station, but also in terms of the requirements of the rail safety regulator. So we are glad that we are closing that kind of a gap. Chair, I stated earlier on that the main challenge, of course, is for us to keep the system going, whilst at the same time making sure that we prepare for a modern system. And it's a transition, and there are always the kind of challenge from a management point of view, from a strategy point of view, because you need to know, you need to have interventions that do not. We need to migrate from the current technology. The current technology is 1956 on our rolling stock. On the signaling system, it's even much older than that. So the systems have become so obsolete. So we need to have a process where we have the kind of transition. You could see the point that on some of the long distances, the average speed of 50 kilometers per hour. Now, that is why Shosholoza Mail takes 24 hours from Johannesburg to Cape Town, because you've got on some of the network moving at 50 kilometers per hour. Now, it's not the future of the system. And I want to argue, Chairperson, that there's just no way in which we are going to build a sustainable long-distance rail service if we are moving at 50 kilometers per hour. And there are many ways of doing it, of a transition, as we've seen in many other countries. They've been able to keep a balance between the existing technology as well, particularly when you talk about the gauges. We are using the narrow gauge. They've put in a set track, so that you are able to use trains that are both on a narrow gauge as well as on what we call the standard gauge, which is what the Hull train is going to use, to enable you to move trains more faster. Because a train that moves with high speed on a narrow gauge, it loses the kind of balance that is required. But I'll leave that to the safety, to our safety colleagues to go much deeper into that. So the future of long distance, we need to make the transition from the current. I like the premier class. I travel on it all the time. It's beautiful, but it's not the future. And I think that it's very important for us to acknowledge that we have a system that is very good, but not the future. The same thing on the metro rail side. We've got trains that, with the refurbishment, we are buying another 20 years out of that process, out of a coach. So every coach that comes back, we spend 4 or 5 million rands on it. We are getting an extra 20 years from that particular coach. Yet, from a technology point of view, from the traction point of technology that we utilize, it lives in the past. It's no longer the future of what we have. And I think, Chairperson, that is the main challenge that we have. Our focus, of course, on the rolling stock side, because that is the main issue that we have, we are looking at three things, currently as programs that we are implementing. We are raising our level of maintenance. We spend about 800 million rands on maintenance. And Chairperson, I must say that you ask the question, how can we do things differently? When we look at the 800 million rands that we spend on maintenance, we are not getting the value for money. The depots that we have do not have the technology and the skills. Most of the resources that we spend goes to waste. So even though a coach would have gone through a maintenance cycle, but the reliability factor doesn't go up, doesn't improve. So it's one of the major things that we are looking forward to restructuring under the preventative maintenance program so that we get much value for it. We of course, have spoke about the rolling stock upgrade and the technology, that is the refurbishment. But I wanted the closer chair to talk about the recapitalization of the fleet, which means a completely new fleet, because I think that we have now entered the period where we need to buy. I presented this slide, Chairperson, to the rail safety regulator recently at their board, and you can see that when we talk about the Metro Rail 5M, the current fleet that we have for Metro Rail, with all the great indicators or criteria that you apply, we fail in almost all of them but one. So when you talk about a modern train, a modern coach, and you look at all the indicators that are there, you go to Brazil, you go to Germany, you go to France, to the UK, you look at the modern train, a contemporary train, and with all the greens there, well, that would be the, those would be the requirements. We failed when we did our own comparison on all of them but one, and that is on heating. So it tells you that the current fleet that we have will not take us forward and meet the requirements of a modern changing economy. Chairperson, I think this is an example of the kind of upgrades we've been doing. The bulk of our fleet of 1956 technology is what we call the 5M28. You can see that on your left, and you can see the upgrade on your right. That's the kind of upgrade that we've been doing, that has become so costly. We spend about 5 million rand to convert a motor coach from a 5M2A to what you call the 10M5. The cost of these upgrades has now gone so much up, Chairperson, that it is starting to encroach on the price of a new coach. In fact, as we celebrate the fact that we have delivered 709 against the target of 700, the question that I think all of us should be asking, whether we should continue with this program beyond next year at the same scale that we've been doing, if we're spending so much money, which is almost the price of a new coach, shouldn't we now begin to look at the process towards acquiring a new coaches for the country? I think that I spoke about the signaling. I want to go back again to that. That the signaling system is at the end of its economic life, and there it is. Only 14% of the 162 signaling installations have exceeded that design life. It tells you that from a safety as well as from an efficiency point of view, you have a system when there are these failures. It means you depend on a manual system, which brings again the human factor and the errors that goes with that. And that affects, of course, your availability, your reliability, as well as your capacity that you have. I think, Chair, that I want to move closer to the end now. I'm going to jump some of those. I want to focus now on the challenges moving forward. I think, Chair, we in the initial slide we spoke about the need. We've established PRASA. We're trying to position it in the public domain. Of course, a lot of people when they talk about PRASA, they talk about Metro Rail. It's one of our businesses, but PRASA is far bigger than in terms of the mandate, far bigger than the commuter rail, which is Metro Rail. But I think that it shows that Metro Rail has become such a brand in its own right, both for positive and for negative reasons. When people see a train, even if it has nothing to do with Metro Rail, like on freight, they just say Metro Rail. It tells you how powerful, how established, and we couldn't afford to just ignore that, because it means that the public can easily associate it with that, and we've decided to build onto that issue. We've taken over Shosholoza Mail from Transnet. But we know that there are a number of other issues that are linked with that. The performance, for example, if you look at the Shosholoza Mail when we took it over from Transnet, the on-time performance was about 38%. Now, that is not good enough. And that has to do with how Transnet makes available the network to Shosholoza Mail. I was one day on this train, and it was stopped to allow for another train to pass. And only to find that this train that was allowed to pass, it was just a train carrying people that were being trained. We were holding passengers for 2 hours on board. So the access to the network under the control of Transnet becomes very vital for whether Shosholoza can become viable. When we promise a service out there to people And most of the people say, we don't like traveling long distances by taxi. They are right. But they say, I don't have a guarantee that your train will arrive on time. Or it will be in the Eastern Cape or in Limpopo the following day. And the issue relates to the network. When a train of Transnet Freight Rail fails on their own network, it takes them not less than 8 hours on average for them to clear the line, which is a major problem that we have. So it means, therefore, that the train leaving Johannesburg to Durban, it can be held for hours. And what do people do? They say, I'd rather travel on a taxi. And we know from a transport planning point of view that it is not appropriate, actually. It's not an efficient transport system that allows taxis to move for long distance with 15 people when you should be using a train that could move the right numbers of people over those long distances. But the reliability factor is a major issue that is there. The technology, I said, is a major challenge. I think that we have to move, and the more you operate the old system, the cost of running that system keeps on going up. And that's what we've learned over the past 2 years. We're trying to keep this old system running, but it means the costs are going up, and I think that we'll see that when we table our annual report. Here's a major challenge. I said I'll come back to the new rolling stock. When we talk about the rolling stock, about 80% of the current fleet, which means about 1,350 coaches, are nearing retirement in 36 months. Unless you do something about that, what it means is that we've got the potential that despite the fact that we've implemented a successful turnaround, the real possibility of this business shrinking by 30% is real in about 4 years' time, unless definite steps are taken today. And that is why the process to acquire new modern coaches has become so urgent that we would have spent 25 billion rand today, but if we do not take the right steps to make sure that it is complemented by the new stock in about 4 years' time, then we're going to have a problem. And I think, Chair, it's something that we're discussing with the Department of Transport, and we've urged that we move with lightning speed on that particular issue so that we've got a decision on the matter, we're able to implement this kind of intervention. Funding is a major challenge, Chairperson, for us. You'd recall that I said we are subsidized at 67%. But if we want to build new capacity for the future, it means we have to fund this business differently. And that is why we are proud to welcome our new, brand new CFO, Ms. Cindy Mabasokoyana, behind me here. Cindy's one of the major roles to ensure that we drive a new funding model in terms of revenues, in terms of borrowings, in terms of changing our balance sheet so that we can meet the challenges of the future. Not everything that we want is going to come from the national fiscal. We know that there are pressures about housing, about other things. So this business will have to change, have a balance sheet, and be able to borrow against its own assets out in the market. And I think that at some stage, through the department, we'll probably share the kind of strategy about how do we intend to finance that business so that we don't then get 100%. Many of the business railway operations around the world, they are required to meet their own operational requirements from internal, which means from fares, from their properties, and then government only subsidizes them for the capital side of the business. But for us today, everything amounting to 67% is met by government. I spoke about our property portfolio. We are not getting much value today. We are spending about 220 million on the property portfolio, and our expenses are almost the same. Now, for a property portfolio, we are sitting on a huge asset, and we've taken a decision as a board that we need to unleash that potential so that over the years, it can contribute about 30% of what we require in this business. So I think that is a major issue. Chair, so I think that those are the challenges. What are the focus? What is our focus over the next 3 years? We've identified three areas of focus. One is continue to push for service excellence in the delivery of services by Metro Rail, Shosholoza, and Autopex. And here I mean simple things, Chairperson. Trains on time is a major issue. Reducing train cancellations, making sure that our stations are clean, making sure that there's making sure that safety and security is there. I think that's what we are continuing to drive. In the short term, these are delivery issues we'll continue to drive. There are, I can assure you that if honorable member, that in Cape Town here, our trains are 93% on time, which I think that is the most, as you know, that 58% of the commuting public in the Cape uses trains in this part of the of the country. And I think that the performance has been very good. We want that to be replicated, particularly the major heartland of the economy in Gauteng. We still don't have performing at that level. It's a weakness, and as well as in KZN. The Eastern Cape has been performing very well at 95%, but of course it is the smallest of our own operations. So in the bigger scheme of things, it doesn't change the picture. But if we want to win, the Western Cape and Gauteng should be at the heart of what we have. So property development, I've dealt with that, and of course the modernization of technology. In the next 3 years in the MTF, those are the three things that will be driving. And what are the initiatives to be linked with that? I spoke about the funding model. I think, Chair, that is a major issue for us. It will have to change. We'll have to change a number of things, including the way the government subsidizes railways. And I think that this committee will be interested in the way in which we go about doing those kind of things. The new rolling stock, Chairperson, it will cost us 70 to 80 billion rands over a period of 12 years. We think it is affordable. For our country to spend 4 billion rands per annum to service a bond or a loan for a new rolling stock that we're going to use for the next 45 years. And I think that if you look at the business case, if you look at the benefits in terms of the rail engineering industry, they're quite enormous. If you look at the employment and skills, it will be a major benefit for us. And if you look at the kind of rail engineering capacity that we'll build, it won't only benefit South Africa, but it will mean it will benefit the whole of the SADC region as well as Africa. There's every case. I think you look at all sides. It tells us that for us to continue the new rolling stock, of course, as long as we don't make a decision, Chairperson, that the new coaches be built and we import them, we need to build them here at home so that we can create thousands of jobs, so that we can. I mean, if we create two, three major plants to produce this thing, it will be a major opportunity for this country, particularly at this time of economic development. So we buy them today, they can only be delivered in 3 years' time. So we can't delay the process any further. I think that is a major issue we have. We are already on tender with the National Signaling Upgrade Program so that we can also be able to have the capacity to move trains every 3 to 5 minutes. I think that we'll see that being implemented by December, January of this current financial year. We are already upfront. We have already signed contracts with two bus companies, both MAN as well as Mercedes. They've gone through a tender to deliver 570 buses. Those buses, the first of those buses will be delivered next month, and most of them will be delivered by April next year, well in time for 2010. And I think government has given us a government guarantee of about 1.5 billion rands for that. Integration of public transport with the Gautrain, with the taxis and the buses is a major issue. We think that is something that we have to do. We are implementing to change our systems on an ERP system to make sure that we have the right kind of system to manage our resources. I think that is being implemented. And, of course, the property portfolio as it is. Chairperson, in conclusion, I want to say that the establishment of PRASA has given government a new tool in driving and championing public transport in the country. But it also requires that we don't only take over Metro Rail, Shosholoza, Autopex onto the PRASA family. We have to restructure these businesses. And part of the recent strike that we saw related to this particular issue. Metro Rail, for example, we spend 3 billion rands on its operation. The more money you spend on its operations, but the less productivity becomes. That is the problem that we have. You have more people working far lesser hours than it requires, which means effectively, and I know that my colleagues in the trade union movement, they fight with me all the time. The truth is that we pay people to effectively come to work, and then for them to work, we pay them overtime. So it becomes more expensive to run Metro Rail. But the so we spend more money, 3 billion rands, it will keep on going up, yet the quality of the services that Metro Rail delivers doesn't improve because of the system that we have. So we have to restructure it, and I'm discussing with the unions to say, let us work together. Because if we don't do that, it means we're going to have a problem. We'll be forced to retrench workers, and I know that the chairman said we've made a commitment that we'll not do that. But if the cost structure gets out of hand, if it takes 4 billion rands, yet it is transporting fewer people because the services aren't good, the South African public is going to start to ask questions. Are we getting value for money from Metro Rail? And we know the impact. And the passengers are going to vote with their feet. And voting by their feet, it means they'll go to use the other alternative modes of transport, BRT, taxis, buses, and everything. So I think that is a major issue. So I think that we are going to take a responsible decision, work together to make sure that both these businesses are restructured to be able to meet the requirements of the future. And I'm glad that our trade union colleagues are beginning to realize that the way that the direction that we are taking is no longer going to be sustainable. And that is not an anti-labor, anti-union position. It's actually in the interest of labor, because that is a direct way of ensuring that we protect jobs. That is a direct way of ensuring that we improve and deliver quality services that are demanded by the South African public. And finally, Chairperson, I think that I think there's a typo error there. We wanted to say in the final stage sentence that the SRCC, the former SRCC, has laid the foundation through implementing a turnaround strategy. I think it is now for PRASA to take that to new heights. It needs to take this business to new levels. And in doing so, it needs to put in place a plan of transformation as well as the modernization of South African railways as we require. I try to be brief, Chair. I know that it's been difficult, but I think that is the story from ourselves, the achievement, the shortcomings, and the kind of task that we'll be faced with. And I think that we will begin to work with the committee, invite the committee to visit some of our own operations, our depots, to interact with our own employees, to look at some of our centralized train control and the kind of technology, because usually when there's, for example, a train accident, we are told, how does it happen? And I think that behind the railway system is safety. When a train moves into one part of the network behind it automatically goes. It's only when people do not follow, for example, its rules and everything, that will have an accident. Or if the systems are not properly maintained, they're not in the good operational conditions that you're going to have problems. So we want to invite the committee, tell us where you want to go, choose the areas, which station, which facility you want to go to, and we'll arrange. We won't clean them because the committee is coming. We'll show you the reality because it tells us. I think we know that there are areas where we are proud, we're doing well, and there are areas where we know that actually our service leaves much to be desired, and we're working on those as part of the turnaround. And hopefully by March 2010, we'll be able to achieve the targets that were set as part of the turnaround strategy that has been set by the Department of Transport. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We will take both presentations before we go into questions. Have a 5 minute break whilst you are sorting yourself. Thank you.
What's her name?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we now move on with the second presentation?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues from the Department of Transport and Plaza. Chairperson, I just want to assure you that we didn't collude with Mr. Montana in preparing our presentation. Our institution is an independent body. It's an independent regulator. And however, we are lucky made a couple of references to the railway safety regulator. But coincidentally, because of the nature of the work that we do, indeed, I do concur with him on a whole range of issues that he has raised before the portfolio committee. And we will also, I think you would notice in our presentation, raise very sharply some of the challenges that the rail system is facing, and also those challenges that require urgent intervention. Chairperson, I will just start by indicating what we'll be presenting today. We'll start with the Railway Safety Regulator mandate and the background towards the establishment of the Railway Safety Regulator, our approach to safety regulation, just a quick overview of the industry that we're regulating, an overview of the state of safety in railways, and the key safety challenges. And I think that is one area of the presentation that I will pay much more attention on. Our key priorities as the Railway Safety Regulator, key highlights ever since the establishment of this institution, the challenges that we're facing as an institution, our value add, briefly the structure, budget, our equity profile, and conclude. Chairperson, these pictures is just an illustration of what we're all about. Coincidentally, in the I think last Thursday, we had a runaway train around the Jimiston area, and 23 wagons were completely damaged. But interestingly, also the runaway train affected Metro Rail services because it did affect the track on which Metro Rail is operating. And as a result of that, the Metro Rail services for Katlehong had to be shut down. So this illustrates the kind of work that we're doing and the implications thereof. On one hand, you have an incident by TFR, but because of the nature of the integration of the system, it does have implications on the other. An interesting example by Lucky Montana as well, around a train that was having people on a learning program, delaying a Shosholoza Mayo train for 2 hours. That was quite interesting. But even on the incidences, you will find such inconveniences between the two major operators. Chair, this is what we're trying to avoid. Just quickly on the mandate of the Railway Safety Regulator. Our mandate is to oversee safety of railway transport while operators remain responsible for managing the safety of their operations. We promote improved safety performance in order to promote the use of rail. We monitor and ensure safety compliance through conducting the audits, inspections, and occurrence investigations. We develop appropriate safety regulations and standards for safe railway operations. We collect, disseminate information relating to safety performance in the railway environment through producing state of safety reports. I may well indicate that, in fact, we are currently developing the 08-09 State of Safety Report,
once it is, once it's ready, we hope that we will have an opportunity to present it to the portfolio committee. It does have the details on safety performance on various categories that we've defined in our safety regulations, from level crossings, collisions and derailments, and so forth. Also, critically, to promote the harmonization of the railway safety regime of South Africa with SADC rail operations. As you know, Chairman, we do have a SADC protocol on transport communication and meteorology, and the vision of that is to achieve harmony in railway operations that will facilitate seamless movement across borders, which implies basically consistent application of standards, consistent applications of operational procedures and processes, and common usage of technology. So we also advance this objective. We see ourselves as playing a critical role in advancing the harmonization side in the region. Just quickly as background, if you look at the background, Chairperson, towards the establishment of the Railway Safety Regulator, the current legislation, that is the Occupational Health and Safety Act of 1993 and the Mines Health and Safety Act, did not address railway operational safety. The other challenge has been that particularly through the former Spoornet, now Transnet Freight Rail, operators used to set their own rules and monitor their own performance. And, Chair, you are quite aware that the concept of both player and referee it's quite problematic. A large number of operators had no processes for verifying safety performance. The possible introduction of new operators leading to many interfaces within the railway environment. Now, you would know that interfaces present one of the major risks in the railway environment. Now, the more you introduce the operators, the bigger the risk. And quite clearly, you need to have rules, you need to have processes, you need to have procedures, guidelines on how you're going to manage those interfaces between the various operators. As you'd note, the freight logistics strategy also talks about the need to introduce new players in the secondary lines and to a smaller extent to the primary lines. But also you do have operators from the region who are operating into the country, for example, Botswana Railways, Swaziland Railways, and you need to be able to manage those interfaces, use common rules, common sets of standards, and so on. The consideration of setting up such a body was taking into account as well the models that have been applied in other modes of transport. If you look at the air, in the aviation environment, you do have a civil aviation authority. In maritime, you have the Maritime Safety Authority. You look at the road traffic environment, you have the Road Traffic Management Corporation. And a similar approach has been now currently applied to the railway environment. Quite interestingly, I think the common usage of the regulatory framework in railways, it's still at its infant state. If you look at particularly maritime and aviation, there's already international conventions that govern the safety regulatory framework in those environments. Whereas in railways, it is developing at this stage. And I think we're learning a lot out of the European Union on the strides that they're making in order to standardize on their approaches to the railway environment. The RSR Act, Chairperson, as a result of all of these, was promulgated in 2002. However, the institution really started operating as a fully-fledged institution in early 2006. That's when we set up the inspectorate. Before then, it operated as a project team, having a few officials who were really driving its setting up. However, from January 2006, it started operating as a fully fledged institution. We are now 3.5 years operating as a fully fledged institution. Quickly, Chair, our approach to safety regulation, we have legal instruments that guide the work that we do. We've got compliance and monitoring activities and enforcement on the other side. The legal instruments is our Act, the regulation, safety regulation standards, the safety management system, which is the anchor of our regulatory framework, the safety permit and cooperative agreements with other state entities. On compliance and monitoring, it's about safety audits and inspections, occurrence investigations, safety assessments of new works or technology and operational improvements. We also are able to monitor performance through the state of safety reports that we produce annually, as well as safety plans that the operators produce on an annual basis. We use that as a tool to measure whether operators are performing in terms of the target that they themselves set. On the enforcement side, we can suspend or revoke a safety permit in the event that we realize that operators are not complying with the legislative framework. We can restrict or suspend an activity when we pick up that an operation is taking place under unsafe conditions. We've done it before. One example, I think in Shongweni, there was a sliding embankment in Shongweni, and we had to suspend operations on that line, TFR operations on that line, until they sorted out the problem attendant to that embankment. We issue directives and notices on a regular basis once we pick up that there is a risk, there's a safety risk of whatever nature, whether serious, it depends, maybe minor, major, or very serious, and we'll issue a directive accordingly. The Act also provides that we can lay a criminal charge against a contravener in the event that there is non-compliance with the Act, and we can basically do that through, you know, the normal criminal justice system. With the amendment of our Act, we are now in a position to mete out monetary penalties. Although obviously there is a legal framework that we'll have to follow, we'll have to finalize the regulations, and those will have to be published. We are currently working on the penalty framework, and we hope to introduce the penalty system in the next financial year. Chair, this is just, I'm not going to go through this slide. This is just an emphasis on the regulatory framework. Our approach to safety regulation. I'll just move to the safety management system. As I said, I think the safety management system is the anchor of our safety regulatory framework. Now, its definition is that it's a formal framework for integrating safety into day-to-day railway operations and includes safety goals and performance targets, risk assessment, responsibilities and authorities, rules and procedures, monitoring and evaluation processes, and any other matter that we may prescribe. So this is a holistic, integrated safety management framework, starting right at the setting up the goals into the actual day-to-day rules and procedures, as well as the monitoring and evaluation processes. Quickly, what are the key elements? As I said, this is the anchor really of our work. So what are the key elements of the safety management system? At the first level, you have policy structure and procedures, which is around the safety policy statement, authority and responsibility, the role of employees, the safety plans, which basically indicate what your plan is to improve safety and your targets and so on, and the safety audits that the operators themselves will have to undertake. On another level is operational risk management processes, your risk management risk assessment processes, risk control strategies, occurrence management, occurrence reporting, and occurrence investigations. The issue that the CEO of the group CEO of PRASA mentioned, human factors management, outlining safety critical work. In this instance, you may talk of trained drivers, trained control officers, and so forth. And the physical environment factors, environmental factors impacting on these safety critical roles. For instance, if people have to move from an automatic mode to a manual mode, what are the implications? And the organizational and psychological factors. This may also include factors such as your medical surveillance, whether drivers are fit for purpose, for undertaking a certain operation and so on. These are some of the elements that are critical in the management of, in a complete management of a safety management system. The safety standards for technical and operational systems, this is about the standards, written safety standards, procedures and instructions for technical and operational systems. And these, they cover your check, civil electric checks in infrastructure, rolling stock and so on. Interface management, I've mentioned that interface management is very critical. This is where operations of one operator integrate with another. And this is a highly sensitive area from a safety point of view, and it needs to be managed very, very carefully. Importantly is the identification of all these interfaces and how operators manage these interfaces from a safety point of view. On security management, procedures to guide all aspects of security impacting on safe operations, including physical security measures in place to manage assets, equipment, and people. This is very critical, and you would note as I move on with my presentation that in fact this issue presents one of the major risks in the railway environment, both from an operational point of view, but also from the safety of persons that are being transported through the railway system. Procurement of goods and services. This is about the products and services to address railway safety requirements and the capability of contractors for safety-related work. Just to digress a bit, this is very critical because some of the operators, particularly the smaller ones, you'll find that if we picked up an anomaly in the system, they tend to blame the contractors. And our view is that those that we've issued with a permit take the overall responsibility, even for their contractors. If you'd recall the Blue Train incident in 2005, which was as a result of a wrong side signaling failure, if you look at the root cause of that incident, it was because of failure of the contractors to effect proper quality management procedures. There was a solder splatter one of the relay units that were being refurbished, which eventually led to this wrong side signaling failure. Hence the crash between the Blue Train and the Shosholoza-Meyo. And that was a direct result of poor quality management by the contractors. TFR cannot, for instance, remove themselves away from that accountability. And we did indicate that concern around the effectiveness of the processes, of their internal processes for managing contract work.
Chairperson, this is just a quick overview of the industry and the breakdown thereof. I may need to indicate that Class 1 railways, it's your TFR and Metro Rail. And as we registered the sites over the past month, in fact, their size is not 39. I need to correct that. It's actually 70. However, this does not indicate, it's not an indication of the size, because Class 1 railways are by far the largest. You may have one site which is far much bigger than a site, for instance, in the agricultural sector, or a combination of 20, 40, 50 sites in the agricultural sector. This is just the pure numbers, and it doesn't indicate anything on size. Just quickly, Chair, for our own purposes, we've done what we call a risk perception model, where basically we identified where the risks lie in the system, or where the major risks lie in the system, and which areas are of a low risk, so that we can target our interventions and focus specifically on those areas that we regard as high risk and to an extent medium risk. Because of the limited amount of resources that we have, we had to undertake this exercise so that we have much more targeted interventions. You would note the 158 operational sites we've identified as high risk, and this is your Class 1 railways, petrochemical, and tourism, and purely because of the nature of their operations, transportation of dangerous goods, transportation of people, a number of interfaces, which is part of the factors that we take into account in doing this, in developing this risk perception model. Chair, I think at the heart of this presentation is the issues that I will be raising from this slide onwards. This is about safety in railways. Now, as I indicated, we're currently developing the 0809 report, and we do have indicative preliminary figures, but I thought it would be best to just present the figures up till 0708 until we've completed the verification exercise on the latest data. Now, from 045 to 78, the combined accrued cost for both TFR and Metro Rail amounted to 2.4 billion, excluding indirect costs. Indirect costs, that means the cost of business interruptions. For instance, I made an example about the incident last week. That incident does have a direct cost bearing on, it has a direct cost to both Metro Rail and Prasa, simply because the line had to be closed, you know, for a sizable amount of time. So it does have costs, and we don't factor in those costs at this stage. The collisions and derailments contributed over 90% of the combined incident cost for both TFR and Metro Rail. And this number has been, and I need to indicate, this number has been brought about, the 90% is a direct result of collision and derailment costs attributed mainly to TFR. By far, the largest incident cost in this category is TFR. And if you look at the preliminary indications for 0809, you can attribute a figure of around 550 million to TFR, resulting mainly from collisions and derailments. Now, what are the factors? The major contributory factors, I think Mr. Montana has indicated, human factors, that is human error, it's a key issue, it's a key concern, the poor state of infrastructure and rolling stock, and these are related because as you have poor infrastructure, which is dysfunctional, most of your time you have to operate on a manual mode, and that's where the system is prone to errors, because it's driven by human intervention, and humans tend to make errors. The other issue is the poor practices and operating procedures, also related to the human factor element. You may have procedures in place, however, you find that those that are supposed to implement those procedures basically take shortcuts. Also, Chair, there's a general negative perception about rail transport in relation to safety and operational efficiency. And some of the issues that were presented in the previous, were mentioned in the previous presentation, are some of our critical concerns. This is really a detailed breakdown. I'm not going to go through it in detail, but it just does indicate a breakdown of the incidents. And we've just extracted Category A, which is derailments and collisions, just to illustrate the nature of the challenge. You would note for 0708, train-on-train collision for Metrorail was only one, and the bulk is collisions on the running line. However, I think it's very important as well to just indicate that there is a technical definition for collision on the running line. Even if a train hits a stone that sits on a line, we will regard that as a collision. It's a technical definition. Any incident that happens and on the line has to be reported as such. However, if you look at the picture from TFR, it's a totally different picture. And in fact, this is where we have major problems, particularly around derailments. You would note also that we have revised also the reporting formats so that there is a very clear breakdown of derailments on one hand and then collisions on the other, so that it's not a mixture of derailments and collisions, so that you can be able to have a clear picture of what constitutes derailments from a numbers point of view and purely collisions. And this is part and parcel of improving our safety reporting system. So the next report will make a very clear delineation of these categories instead of merging them into one. But we do have serious concerns around the spate of derailments and collisions in the freight environment. Just this is an extract as well, which we thought that of the incident data, which we thought that it would be of interest to the committee. As I indicated, we do have a variety of categories that would be your level crossings, people struck by trains, and so on. But we just thought, let's just extract those that we think may be of interest for the committee. Now, if you look at the security-related occurrences, and I think this zooms into the point that I really want to highlight, the chairperson indicated that we may need to highlight the issues that we think the committee can take up. And I think on this slide, the issue of vandalism and theft of operational assets is a major problem. And this is not a problem that's only experienced in the railway environment. As you would know, Eskom has the same problem, Telkom has the same problem. So it is a problem that requires major intervention. Major intervention from all key role players. And I think the impact that it has from a cost point of view, from the running of the service point of view, from efficiencies point of view, it's very serious. If you look, for instance, in the report and the number of reported incidences of vandalism and theft of operational assets, This is quite shocking. On the, it should be Plaza Metro Rail site, same problem. If you look at personal safety, there is a notable improvement. The preliminary indications for 0809 also shows major improvements. And I think as Mr. Mandana has indicated, I think the rollout of the railway police in the railway environment has really made a major dent in arresting this phenomenon. So from a personal point safety point of view, I must say that we are quite reasonably satisfied that at least the measures that are being taken up are yielding the required results. Yes, we're not there yet, but at least it is yielding the kind of results that we're looking for. And I think we must commend both PRASA and the SAPS in making this major improvement. Vandalism and theft of operational assets, if you look at the figures, also there is notable improvement. And I think it's got to do with the measures that have been taken by PRASA to really protect the assets and make sure that the security measures are being put in place to protect these assets. However, it still remains a concern. You would note in the findings, our current investigation findings, that in fact the issue of vandalism and theft of assets does have a whole range of other implications for the system. On the injuries and fatalities, in 07, this is 07-08 information, the total injuries reported by both PRASA and Transnet Freight Rail was 1,750 and fatalities 458. Now, on the injuries, the bulk of that is what is called people and train-related, and by that, it may be people falling off trains for a variety of reasons. 498 security-related, this has to do with personal safety. 181 is people struck by trains outside your formal level crossing. And then 107 is level crossing incidences, and then 105 is injuries resulting from collisions and derailments. If you look at fatalities, the bulk of that is people struck by trains outside your normal formal level crossing, and then 27 is people and train related. When you say people and train related, it may also be as a result of people falling off trains. And then 21 is security-related, which involves personal safety. And then 14 is level crossings. This is just a pie chart breakdown of the slide that I just presented. Same as this one. Now, with all of this data, and I think we are going to do a much more detailed presentation once we produce our annual State of Safety Report, the 0809 State of Safety Report, which will reflect on what our key findings are from an audit, inspection, and occurrence investigation perspective, what the safety plans of the operators indicate, have they met those targets, what are the reasons for not meeting those targets, and so on. So a much more detailed analysis will be done when we present the annual State of Safety Report. Those will be contained in our annual State of Safety Report. However, we just thought that let's just extract some of the key issues emanating out of our audit, inspection, and occurrence investigation findings. One, think this is an issue that we are going to raise on an ongoing basis. We do have concern around the condition of the aging infrastructure, rolling stock, signaling and radio systems, as well as capacity planning. This is a major concern. If we don't address these issues urgently, particularly in our commuter environment, the system is going to fall flat. We've noted a deterioration in the average time between failures of suburban sets from 300 hours 10 years ago to a dismal 100 hours currently, meaning that if you put a train on service, currently it will take around 100 hours for it to operate normally, and then the next thing, it fails somewhere. Whereas before it was 300 hours. The age of signaling and communication equipment and the scarcity of spares, which results in concert failures below standard emergency repairs. The constant introduction of inherently less safe manual procedures as a result of this constant service failure. Non-adherence to operating procedures, particularly when manual procedures are put in place. So as I indicated, there is a relationship between the failure of the system that anchors, that runs the whole system from a technology point of view, the infrastructure, the rolling stock, and the need to move into a manual mode, which on its own presents further risks into the system. So all of these are related. One can't single one out and say, we should address this problem. Once we address this one, then we would have resolved the problem. I think this requires attention holistically instead of just isolating one. And we do concur with PRASA that, in fact, this is an issue that requires urgent attention. As I indicated, the number of incidences can be directly and partly related to human error. Although, obviously, as the railway safety regulator, what we do, we would look at the immediate cause of an incident, and you may find that indeed it is human error. However, we dig deeper and look at the root causes, what are the underlying factors. And this is where then you are able to come up with issues around the state of the infrastructure, rolling stock, and so on. And the point that was raised by PRASA, again, there's a critical shortage of skilled technical staff for maintenance and new railworks. And we've also picked up, when we're investigating the Vonerboom incident, and as part of just checking what the technicians do there, we, in that area, it was quite interesting to note that, in fact, firstly, you've got the shortage of technicians, but most of the time they spend time replacing equipment that has been stolen. So the bulk of their time is not on maintenance, your normal regular maintenance, but it's on replacing equipment. It's a costly exercise, one. Two, you have shortage of skilled personnel, which is focused on things that are not related to maintenance. Well, it is to an extent. However, it is about replacing all the time. And it is a serious concern for us. As I said, ongoing severe vandalism and theft, particularly of copper cables and equipment containing copper, is a serious concern. It does affect the safe operation of the system, safe, efficient operation of the system, and it has to a large extent in some instances, although it is this phenomenon is not common nowadays, but it had to a large extent led to commuter backlash on some occasions, where commuters get frustrated because the system is not running as efficiently as they would want it to run, and the backlash may result, for instance, in the banning of trains and so on. So this is indeed a concern. Also, Chair, we thought that we should mention this issue as well, the issue of commuter trains operating with open doors is still a major concern. We have issued a directive in this regard, and we are engaging PRASA on the implementation of the mitigation measures. Yes, there are issues there around overcrowding. There's a whole range of issues that we're talking about. However, our view is that there are steps that can be taken to mitigate this risk. And I think the engagements recently have been very positive. We are, in fact, expecting a report from PRASA, I think, in the course of this week on how they're going to implement a number of elements that we've put in, a number of requirements that we've stated there, and where, for instance, they would be unable, they would need to indicate that to us. However, Chair, we thought that this is an important issue. If you look at the statistics that we've just presented, the issue around people falling off trains and so on is a big safety risk. It had led to injuries and loss of life, and we need to do something in order to arrest that problem. Chairperson, also on level crossings, the bulk of level crossing accidents. In fact, we were discussing this and say basically over 95% are caused by negligence on the part of the road user. And in fact, on almost all investigations that we have done, the road user acted negligently on the investigations that we've basically done. However, we are finding serious concerns around basically the whole road-rail interface from a traffic science point of view. For us, Chairman, we've basically looked at the number of interventions that we can undertake immediately. And one of the interventions that we need to undertake immediately is the issue around consistent application of road signage. To us, it doesn't make sense that if you have a traffic light which indicates green that you must go and red you stop and yellow is caution, and then where there's a road rail interface, you have lights, flashing lights. It may be red, it may be yellow, and it sends conflicting messages to a road user who's used to a consistent, who's quite familiar with the road signage. And we are engaging the Department of Transport currently that we need to revisit the road traffic science manual, but also as it relates to the application of signage at level crossings. Why don't we apply consistent signage on the roadside as well as where there's railroad interface? Because these signs are aimed primarily, in fact, directed at the road user. So the message has to be consistent with the road user. In fact, it's quite interesting. If a huge truck hits a buggy, a small buggy, or hits a sedan, simply because the sedan driver ignored the traffic sign, it doesn't become a major issue. However, if a person, an individual, ignored signs on the level crossing and it's hit by a train, it is a huge issue. However, there are a whole range of other underlying concerns. We've looked at the configuration of the signage in the along the level crossings. There's an issue of jurisdiction, which is still a concern. Who takes responsibility for putting road marks on the level crossings? Is it the operator? Is it local government? Is it provincial departments? And so on. There's an issue there around jurisdiction, and it needs to be attended to quite urgently. So we are looking at this together with the Department of Transport and the operators. And Chairperson, we would want to very soon come up with a very clear strategy on how we need to address the level crossing problems. still, Chairperson, one of the issues that we feel that it needs to be elevated beyond the realm of the RSR is the mushrooming of informal settlements along the Rio Reserve, which poses a major safety risk. One, if you look at the incidences, the bulk of the fatalities is people struck by trains on illegal crossings, which means that these are not dedicated crossings for like a level crossing. So it does present a major risk. And we found out that, in fact, there has been, you know, it's not even a study. I think it's now, if you look in Western Cape, the Eteguini region, Gauteng, it is a major problem. It's a very serious problem that needs to be attended to. We did initiate a project which we call the Human Tragedy Project. We took the initiative to steer it. However, we realized along the way that this actually requires to be driven by government departments. Hence, we are engaging DOT for the Department of Transport to take up the issue with the relevant departments, and in this regard, the Human Settlements Department, for us to really address this problem. Because it does have risks on the safe operation of railways. I've indicated one from theft and vandalism point of view of the assets, two, interference with the railway infrastructure. There are people who connect power from the railway infrastructure, who generate power from railway infrastructure. Also, if you look at from an access point of view and the way these informal settlements the informal settlements, the settling patterns in the informal settlements. To a larger degree, some of those are even impeding on the access roads for maintenance personnel. Hence, it creates a whole lot of obstruction from a maintenance point of view, just a pure maintenance point of view. So there's a whole series of problems that are attached to this problem around the mushrooming of informal settlements along the Rio Reserve. And I think this is something that we would really want the portfolio committee to take up. Not only does it present risk to the railway environment itself, but to even the communities living along those rail reserves, to the children there, but also people generally from a safety point of view. The level of exposure to risk is quite high. So this is something that really requires urgent attention. As I indicated, also theft and vandalism is a problem that can be directly linked to also to the mushrooming of informal settlements along these reserves.
Can we try and move with speed because of time?
Yes. Okay. So this is just an illustration of the nature, although this line is not a line that is in operation. But if we decide, for instance, at some point to revive this line, if you look at the infrastructure, it's basically finished. It will cost a whole lot of money to revive that line. So this is the kind of risk that we're talking about. The problems in the commuter environment, these have been mentioned in the previous presentation. I will not get too much into that. Chair, I think quickly, and I think what's important is for us as the railway safety regulator, do we throw up our arms in the air and say, look, there isn't much that can be done. The equipment is old, the infrastructure is old. There isn't much that can be done to salvage the situation. We say, look, we shouldn't do that. Our view is that let us assess the condition and status of the critical elements of this infrastructure. and see how can we ensure that with the current infrastructure we can improve availability, reliability, and operational safety. Because that's critical. We do have the system currently with its shortcomings, and we have to work within the limits that we have. And hence we say our focus is to looking at how best can we make do with the current system that we have, whilst obviously taking into account the need for refurbishment and the renewal programs. And also look at whether sufficient measures taken to ensure that these assets can continue to be used in a safe manner whilst renewal programs are being introduced. Just on our priorities, as I indicated, flowing from the previous slide, the key priority is to improve safety, compliance, and adequacy of the railway operations from a safety point of view. And we'll do that through the targeted specific audits and inspections on rail infrastructure and rolling stock. We'll continue to undertake occurrence investigations to see the systemic problems, what the underlying problems are within the system in order to improve the system, conduct design reviews and safety assessments of new railways in order to ensure that there is integration of safety requirements in those new railways. On the strengthening of the safety regulatory framework, we'll implement the penalty system. We are currently finalizing the development of the train control system standard, the human factor standard, and the occurrence management standard. On the proactive support of key initiatives, we are going to start with dedicated inspections on the routes that have been earmarked to service the World Cup. We'll do the safety assessments of critical elements of the Gautrain. And this is an ongoing continuous work. I'll just skip and move on to the... Yes, on the effective stakeholder partnerships to improve safety, I think the critical issue here is to move a step up in driving the human tragedy project to address issues, concerns around the level crossings and informal settlements along the rail reserve. On the key performance highlights, Chair, we've amended the Act to strengthen our oversight role. We've developed safety management system regulations. We've got regulations on the process for development of the safety standards. We've developed permit regulations. On the standards themselves, we've developed what we call the General Safety Management System Standard, the general standard on technical requirements for engineering and operational standards, standards on track, civil and electrical infrastructure, rolling stock standard, and what we call a guidance notice on design, construction, and commissioning of new railways. On the permits, we've evaluated operators' safety management system reports as a prerequisite for issuing safety permits. In the past financial year, we issued 184 safety permits, and we've implemented a permit fee model, which generated around 5 million for the RSR. Safety audits, we've conducted a total of 665 SMS audits on operational sites, a total of 26 ad hoc inspections, a total of 42 occurrence investigations and board of inquiries, 77 design reviews and safety assessments of new railways. With directives and notices, we've already issued 9 prohibition directives. This is when immediate threat to railway safety is evident. 63 non-compliance notices. This is when no elements of safety management system were implemented. 83 improvement directives. When there's a possible threat to safety, for instance, in the event when there's infrastructure defects, and 4,009 audit non-conformance notices, which relate to relatively minor but important findings within operator safety management systems. On Gautrain, we've done an assessment of the railway tunnel from Park Station to Marlborough. We've done a train control system assessment, which includes signaling and communication system. We've done a rolling stock assessment, and we've developed what we call a hazard log, which identifies possible risks in the entire life cycle of the Gauteng project, which we monitor on an ongoing basis, meaning every month when we meet, we look at the hazard log and we look at the mitigation steps that have been taken to deal with the potential hazards in the development of the Gauteng system. On the regional standards, we have facilitated the development of a safety management system for three regional operators, Botswana, Mozambique, and Swaziland, whom we have issued with permits, and also we have facilitated the development and adoption of the regional safety policy through what we call the Southern African Railways Association. This is part of the harmonization drive in the region. On safety information and plans, we've already published two state of safety reports, and on an ongoing basis, we monitor, for instance, the development of safety plans by operators as part of our performance monitoring tool. On stakeholder partnerships to improve safety, I think the critical one, Chair, is it's about the National Railway Crime Combating Forum, which deals with issues of crime and security in the railway environment, and we are active participants. PRASA, TFR, DOT, and a number of stakeholders are participating in that forum, and it actually comes up with actions that need to be taken in order to address the problems of crime and security in the railway environment. We've established relations with the government security regulator, which oversees security, which sets up standards, particularly for our national key points, but also has got a particular focus on railways as well. We've established a number of formal liaison forums with the operators, PRASA, TFR, Bombela, cooperative agreements with the South African Bureau of Standards, and so on. There's a whole range of stakeholder engagements that we're busy, including as well and critically the commuter organizations, which obviously for us play an important role in alerting us on the safety concerns that they have on a daily basis in the commuter rail environment. RSR, the institution, Chair, we've established a competent skill inspectorate, although we still are short in terms of numbers. We still feel that the inspectorate numbers are grossly inadequate. We currently have 10 inspectors, and if you look at the totality of the interventions that we have to make, it is very difficult to operate with that number of inspectors. Generally, as an institution, we have had no adverse audit findings for the past 3 years, and there's the equity stats, Chair. 4 out of our 9 RSR top management is female, of which 3 is black Africans and 1 white female. And then 6 out of 9 of our top management team is African. Institutional challenges, the funding constraints, I've already indicated concerns around the inspectorate. Also, I think the amendment of our Act has put an additional burden, particularly in relation to the mandate that relates to the RSR requiring to address what is called occupational health and safety issues that have an impact on operational safety. For instance, if the noise levels in the locomotives affect train drivers, it's an occupational health and safety issue. But also it will have implications on the operational safety side. Hence, the RSR will need to play a role. Whereas before the amendment, that was purely within the domain of the Department of Labor. Now, the RSR will take up that responsibility. We are currently finalizing the MOU with Department of Labor in order to agree on how we should address those kinds of issues. Just I think on the budget, you would notice it's nowhere near Plaza's budget, far below Plaza's budget. But however, I think what I need to emphasize is that our institution is driven mainly by the skills, the kind of personnel. So there is no investment in rolling stock, in infrastructure, and so on. Our work is driven mainly by the skills that we have. So we spend the bulk of our resources on basically on the skills that we have. Hence, you see our budget for 08-09 is 45 million, which is completely insignificant if you are to compare with PRASA. And this is the actual breakdown. And you would see the assurance department takes the bulk. This is where our inspectorate is. It takes the bulk of our budget allocation, which is 37% of our allocation. And this is basically our employment equity profile. And in conclusion, Chairperson, we hope that our interventions will contribute in enhancing the safety management culture in railways, reducing accident costs associated with railway occurrences, and promoting rail as a preferred mode of transport. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. We are pressed with time. We are expected to adjourn here at 1 o'clock. And I think members have got lots of questions. Could we be rational in terms of the spread to the number of questions that would be asked by each member? I would restrict each member to ask 3 questions. One presentation. Honorable Fox.
Thank you, Chair. It's difficult when you've got such a massive presentation. To be restricted like we are, but needless to say, maybe we can just, you know, interact with the individuals concerned. My first thing is just to comment to say thank you to both the two CEOs. I think they're doing a wonderful job in trying to keep our railworks operational and safe under very difficult and trying circumstances. I don't know how to prioritize these questions, but needless to say, I think the first thing, just to the CEO of Metro Prasa, whether he can give us some progress in terms of where he is with the reclassification of the Schedule 3Bs to Schedule 2, which is part of an initiative which he spoke about to try and get access to private money, let's call it that, money outside of the normal Treasury funds, and whether any progress has been made in reassessing, which is a very important component for that motivation, his asset base. Because 2 years ago, the Auditor General picked up on the fact that there had been an undervaluation taking place in SARCC when that was the case in question. And it's just now very difficult for me to understand how he's going to revalue that in a market sense, if you know what I mean. So I'd like to just see, you know, how they're going to undertake that and what progress they're making and what time frames they have for the purpose of trying to establish that process, because I think it's crucial. You know, looking at what the age of these fleets are at the moment, if that stuff doesn't flow, that money, and we've been calling for it for many, many years from this particular committee, then I think you're going to be running into the ESCOM debacle, which you've spoke about at the last presentation, Lucky. So it's very important that we get that right. So that's my first question. The second one really relates to jurisdiction, if I can call it that. We've got a situation on our hands now where PRASA is operating on lines that don't actually belong to it, as I understand. The network, underlying network, is actually the asset of public enterprises, if I try to put it into a home. Now, here is PRASA spending millions of money trying to fix up the rotten infrastructure that it has to do to maintain and safeguard the passengers that are using the service. I don't know how we're going to fix that, Chair, because at the end of the day, there should be some recovery, because he's got a concession to operate on that line. And yet, at the same time, he's fixing up these assets that don't actually belong to him. So there's a sort of a bit of a concern for me in that regard. And whether, in fact, I'm right in saying that even some of the stations, whether they've been transferred in terms of the title deeds of those particular facilities into his hands, because that will also have asset value when it comes to doing the final balance sheet in respect of what he owns and what he doesn't own in his organization. Just a question as the last one, and that relates to autopacks, which means that I can't answer any questions of the Railway Safety Regulator, I'm sorry to say. That would be that do we have the capacity, knowing what I do, that it takes 18 months to get a vehicle, a bus, registered through the operating licensing board to actually be licensed and operating before 2010. Now, those buses have been purchased or procured now, and you've already inherited some, which I assume already got operating licenses. But for them to operate through the World Cup and then afterwards to act as a service to integrate with your rail and rural services, which I think is a very good idea, are we going to get those operating licensing boards, permits provided to you in time? And if not, then what do we need to do to make sure that that operating licensing board acts beyond the 18-month turnaround period which they're currently handling at the moment? Thanks, Chair.
I'd like to say thanks to the presenters of all these inputs. The first thing I'd like to ask is, Kusapego is draining by the commuters. Now, the one thing that I'd like to know, which in the past, which is very unethical, I think, is where a government department takes another department to court litigation over what you have just mentioned. Some houses are built next to the railway line. Transport, Department of Transport, took human settlement to court. What has happened to that matter? Because that is very unethical for a department of the same government to take another department to court. I'd like to know what has happened to that case. The second one is, we come from a background of working class, where our parents, our elderly brothers, worked in the railway line. They call it Twala Itomo. They went Itomo, like, they Twala Itomo. And that was our livelihood that it brought us up. There are certain lines that are quite disturbing that have been closed down. You take the lines in the Western Cape that I would know about, Emmanuelburg, Northern Cape, there's one I think next to Lingsbeck, like one next to Lingsbeck, which government has also got property, housing property, which accommodated, you don't know, the working class people. And apparently there was an eviction order that was served upon them. They were poor people who had gone on pension. So what happened to those lines? Because I remember myself and I think the former deputy president went to inspect it. That route was quite, it was a bus that was closed down. The last one, I think, those would be the only ones that I'd like to find out from them.
Honorable Kono. Oh, yeah, okay. Thanks, Chairperson. Sorry for that, the mix-ups and all that. And sorry for coming in and out. I was, as a house whip, I was trying to check the health matters later on today. Everything is in line. My question, thanks to the two presentations. But what I wanted to ask, especially that we have an official from the department as well, is to have an integrated transport plan for 2010. I heard Lucky earlier on telling us that they have plans, transport plan for 2010. And we know that, you know, there will be, you know, different transport modes for 2010. So that's why I'm saying we need an integrated transport plan. Last time we had Gautrain coming in and telling us that they will be, if they're not ready by 2010, they will have their buses and all that. We don't want duplication from different entities for 2010. That's why I'm saying we need that. The other thing is to Prasa. The mindsets that people have on trains, especially, you know, the middle class. How are you dealing with that? Have you attracted new commuters into your trains? I must say that, Chairperson, the trains, they really have improved. The cleanliness, you know, people feel safe when they're in a train because you'll always find securities in the trains. But, you know, reviving the railway lines in the rural areas, it will be my question until I see that happening in the communities where we're staying. That we don't want to hear about, you know, the metros, the big metros. We also want to hear about other places where we know that there's a need for public transport, especially public transport that will be efficient and affordable to our people. Bompumalanga, Free State, we don't hear that, and we know that there's a need. Your Northwest, there's a need for trains. Next time when you come, we need to hear something about that. It's difficult, and, you know, that question was for both you and the RSR. When are you refurbishing those lines, the railway lines? But the rolling stock, we've been talking about that maintaining trains, old trains, is very expensive, especially if, in fact, I wanted to ask what is the lifespan of a train and why is it difficult for Prasa, for instance, to buy new trains? I mean, that money that you're using to maintain and always refurbishing here and there, why don't you use that for buying a new stock? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Justice.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
thanks to the two presenters. Thanks very much, in particular to Mr. Montano, who did a particularly good presentation in that he didn't just talk about the successes, but the problems and the challenges that exist. I'd like to just quickly ask that if on the second presentation we could have the same presentation that was presented to us, because it is quite different to what had been tabled here. If we could get that, it would be great. Because there was a lot of information that I was quite interested in that wasn't with us. And then just before I ask my three questions, Madam Chair, if I could just say the chair of PRASA, the chairman of the board, PRASA, said that rail is not a glamorous issue and it's a peripheral issue. Well, I believe it actually is a glamorous issue. And the problem in South Africa is that it's not a glamorous issue. It's not. We can make it glamorous. And what I'd like to do is, what I'd like to suggest is perhaps one of the objectives, one of the mandates is to actually include in here is to take people and goods off roads, because it is the natural, rail is the natural way to go. And at the moment, it's not attractive for people or for goods to go to use rail. And I believe that should be a focus as well. But my three questions, very difficult, just to restrict to three questions, is Mr. Montana talked about new technology, which is music to my ears, about using new style of trains and so forth. Is this in the pipeline? At what time frames are we looking at? And if you could just, when you talk about that, just talk about the whole, everything that goes with it, the signaling, the coaching, the rail, and all that kind of thing. At what frame are we at? Because I totally agree, it's inefficient and silly and expensive to continue using the old equipment, just old, outdated, inefficient, and so forth. So are we looking at things like high-speed trains and all that kind of thing that can benefit the country in the long term but might cost some money initially? Secondly, I heard nothing about intermodal transport. In other words, when talking about all this new technology, is there or are there any plans to for example, Cape Town Airport, just to pick one? Would there be a rail system integrated into the Cape Town Airport, for example? Would there be rail systems integrated to existing bus nodes, that kind of thing, the intermodality where a person can literally continuously be on public transport without needing a car, and they can get around efficiently, effectively, safe, etc., and cost-effectively. And then also the third question is also something that I'm very big on is the property portfolio that PRASA was talking about and using it effectively. And I'm very glad to hear that the board and the CEO are looking at imaginative ways that internationally is happening where, quite frankly, a bus station almost becomes incidental that it's a bus station. People do their shopping, entertaining, and all sorts of things at that bus station as well. Where are we with that, and with planning with that, and and linking that up to the question on the technology and the latest trends. What I will do is I'll email Mr. Montana my additional questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me join my colleagues by thanking the two CEOs for the presentation. I think it was very much informative to us as members of this committee. Chair, I want just to ask a few questions based on what has been presented. Number one, to be directed to Rafa. You talk of the premier class. I think when I was just looking at this booklet, there's a lot of improvement with regard to that premier class. But what I've realized is that I think the demand now is more. Then you can't provide the services expected by the commuters. For instance, if you want to book, you are told that you must book 2 weeks or 3 weeks before. But when you book on that particular time, you're told that it's fully booked. Then you have to book. Now you have to book for November. So, how are you going to deal with such a situation? Although there was an improvement for from four coaches to 16, but I think there's still a lot that needs to be done so that at the end of the day, really, people are not discouraged of using the service. Then, secondly, I think I've been partially covered by Mem Kuno, that when talking of the services, we are urban-based, talking of Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban, but you're silent about the rural areas because we're talking about the rural development strategy. And when looking at the five focus areas that has been identified by the president, rural development is one of the areas that we need to focus on. But you know, when all the departments and agencies come to the committee, they're just quiet about rural development. What are you saying about areas like Komatipoort? What are you saying about areas like Nelspruit? So each and every time we hear of better things in cities,